Welcome to this episode of the Marketing Development Podcast. I am your host, Pete Everett. And today I wanted to do something that's not just a little different, it's quite a lot different. Because if you're listening to this live, if you're listening to this on the podcast, what you've missed out is that this was actually streamed live on Facebook and was recorded as a live episode. Now, what I wanted to talk to you a bit about today, and just for full disclosure, I've already been through all of this once, but there was no audio on the live, so it didn't actually record. So people finally told me about it, and I'm doing it all again. So, yeah, look, I'm going to talk to you about fear and failure, and to be honest, I just had an epic fail. So let's just get that out there, and hopefully with some of the stuff that I'm about to talk about, you will know that I'm okay with that. That is fine. It doesn't hurt at all. It's a little bit frustrating, but it doesn't hurt. So the reason I wanted to talk to you about this today was that over the weekend, my wife Gabs and I went to see a guy called Ant Middleton. If you don't know who he is, he's a former SAS soldier, and he now works in TV and does some of these like SAS survival things and stuff like that. Anyway, he's written a new book, and he came to Sheffield to talk about it, and he spoke about a whole load of stuff, about his time in the SAS, about climbing Mount Everest, different achievements that he's had. But part of what he talked about was based around failure and fear, and it really kind of struck a chord with me. And since I left there the other day, I've sort of been processing this. You know, as you're thinking about stuff on your downtime, it's just been playing on my mind. So I eventually started just making some notes. That's what I do when I'm wanting to work through something. I start writing it down. And I do it in an editable format, so like an Evernote or something, because then as my mind goes, I can start moving stuff around. Anyway, I've been thinking about how we can look at fear and failure and how we can make these things work for us in our businesses. And ultimately, that's what Ant was talking about, was using fear and failure to spur yourself on. So I've been trying to think about how that works in a business context and how that works in a marketing context for agency owners, for small business providers, for marketing consultants, for basically the people that I'm comfortable talking to. How does fear and failure fit into our businesses, and how can we harness the power of that? So let's start with failure. Failure is the biggest hurdle that people face when they're trying to progress their business. And that can be when they're starting out, or it can be when they're developing new services or new streams of income or new products. And I know that there's people watching the live that have just been through some of those things, like launching a new product. And they will have their own stories about the hurdles that they faced, but they managed to overcome them in order to launch that product in the into the real world. See, there's really two keys that hit that trigger failure. That they are the risk of getting things wrong and worrying what others may think. Now, we've all been there. We've all tried stuff and it doesn't work. We've got to accept the fact that sometimes we're just going to get things wrong, okay? Failure is going to be around with us for a hell of a long time, right up until the days that we're no longer here, we're no longer on this planet. So we need to be able to just accept the fact that sometimes stuff's going to happen and it's not going to go our way and we're going to have to revisit things. That's just part of it. So the first item with dealing with failure is to accept it. Accept that it is simply going to be there. The second thing is we then need to be able to learn from it. So knowing that it's sometimes going to happen, when it does crop up, what are the strategies we can put in place that help us learn from it? If it doesn't work, it's fine. But let's not let it not work twice or three times or four times. Let's intervene at that point and learn from something that's gone wrong. So we're still getting a positive out of it. The third is to embrace it. See, the thing is, when you fail, when something does go wrong, it can start you off into a spiral of self-pity, of worry, of stress. And actually, when those things start to happen, they compound each other. They build on each other. And then an actual problem that or the thing that you've that's actually gone wrong starts to get blown up out of all proportion and seems far bigger than the actual root cause of the problem itself. Because the other thing we have to realize is when something does go wrong, there's often consequences to it. But by simply dealing with the consequences, you're not often dealing with the root cause. But in order to get to that root, that one little thing that actually has this consequential effect, you've got to have the mindset to be able to sort of park the consequences and look objectively at what's gone on. So you need to be able to embrace it. And the best way of doing that is to embrace it with a positive mental attitude. So it is that learning thing. It is saying, okay, you know, it hasn't happened, but what can we get out of it? What is it? It all can't be rubbish. It all can't be wrong. There's only got to be one or two or three little bits in here that we need to tweak. So how do we dive back in and correct it so that it'll work again next time? Now, let's just roll this out into a bit of an example, because what I really wanted to give you guys was a process, if you like, of putting measures in place that will help you deal with failure. So let's put this in the context of launching a new product. So the first thing is, what is the smallest possible version of this new product that we can launch? Before we put hours and weeks and months of work into something that we don't know if it's going to work, well, the first measure we can put in place is to say, I'm not going to spend all of that time. What I'm going to do is I'm going to spend a bit of time getting something that has the bones or the structure of this thing in place, and then I can see if that's going to work. You could call it your MVP or your minimal viable product. The next thing is to consider who's going to buy it. This stripped out version, I mean. So who is going to buy it? Now, ideally, if you can cherry pick a few people, you can create some interest and you can identify some potential clients that are going to be good guinea pigs. So, and be perfectly honest with the fact that, look, this is something new that you're doing. This is exactly what I did with the round table idea that we had in the last couple of months. It was a brand new idea. So I put together what could be classed as an MVP. And then I looked at the people that could buy it. And I actually had a profile. For those of you that were on calls with me, I had a profile of the people that I thought this was going to work for. And basically through that conversation, if the profile didn't fit, then actually, you know what? This probably wasn't the best thing for you, because I'm only wanting to deal with people that firstly I can add the most value to, but also this is a product in development. So it's going to be somebody that's going to feed back to me as well. So third thing, how can you deliver this minimal viable product in the fastest possible time? So take away all of the bells and whistles. Just have the thing that you are, the bare bones that you are going to deliver. And how can you do that with, again, the least amount of time input? That's not to say that you're cutting corners or not delivering value, but actually going out and trying to give the red carpet experience for a brand new product isn't really going to be the best thing to do. And then the fourth thing is to say, okay, so what does success look like for you? What does it look like in terms of those three or four clients that you've sold it to? So what are the results that you're hoping to see out of it for their business and for your own? What do the sales look like? It's going to vary on what your product or service is, but what is the measurement of success for you? Now, if you put those four things in place, the great thing about that is that if at any point you get any point going through that process, you get to the position where you think this isn't going to work, or there's an alarm bell going off here, or that doesn't sound quite right, or I'm not going to be able to do that, then you know what? You've got the ability to either pivot onto something else or to back out of it and say, you know what? I don't think this product or service is going to work. Nobody's lost anything. Everybody's absolutely fine. If you've given me some money here, I'll give you money back. It's no problem. You might need to have maybe one or two awkward conversations if you've got clients that were relying on it. But that's what I mean by trying to find clients that are a good fit. Because if it's that desperate to their business that your brand new product succeeds, then you've probably not broken it down far enough. So They're the four things. Smallest possible version. Who's going to buy it? How can you deliver it as fast as you possibly can without any bells and whistles? And then what does success look like on that minimum product? Once you've done that and you've been through at least one iteration, you might do one or two or three, you can then start to make decisions about, so, okay, this thing is starting to work, or it needs a bit of a tweak to work properly, or this is now taking far too much time. It shouldn't be that complicated. How can I simplify it down? So what does version two of the product look like? What does version three of the service look like? You can then start adding on these bells and whistles. Some things might take a bit more time, but they add one hell of a lot more value. Other things might be performance optimizations or process optimizations, which means that things take less time, but still have the same bang for their buck. So that's, in a nutshell, a coping mechanism of dealing with failure. Now, you can always take that and tweak that into either personal situations or personnel or HR. You know, I've done a business development example there, but you can take that concept and very easily move it into different areas of your life or your business. Okay, so let's just park failure for a minute. We're gonna come back and join these two together again at the end. But let's just park failure for a minute. And let's talk a little bit about fear. Now, I understand that fear could be very, very closely linked to failure. But the reality is that fear can seem to be a little bit irrational. We all have fears, and they're all different. You know, some people can cope with heights, some people can't. Some people can cope with public speaking, some people can't. Some people can cope with being in small spaces, some people can't. We all have them, but they're more of an emotive starting point than a failure is often something that's linked to the consequence or the result of something we have tried. Fear often starts before that, which it's an internal thing. It's not something that happens as a consequence. It's something that we generate for ourselves. And really the problem with that is that fear is often linked to the destination. So let's, for example, say that you're scared of heights. And in order to combat this, you decide that you're going to visit the Grand Canyon and you're going to stand at the edge. Well, the reality is that the likelihood of you arriving in your car, pulling up in the parking lot, walking to the edge, I've never been, so I don't know if it's a barrier or a rope or just an edge you could fall off. Anyway, whatever. The reality of you walking up to that edge on your first visit is very, very slim. And all you're really doing is setting yourself up to fail if you take that approach of literally dropping yourself in at the deep end. So what is a far better thing to do is to break that fear down into small chunks and then normalize each of those chunks, each of those stages, by spending time there. So, for example, and this is where some of you that may have been watching the failed live video will find this quite amusing, is that, you know, I'm quite happy doing podcasts. I've done nearly 70 of them. It took me a while to get used to being doing them. It took me a while to get used to being in front of the microphone and talking in a particular way and trying not to say and ah so much. And I still struggle with that, but I've come to terms with the fact that I'm struggling with it. And the only way of getting better at the end of the day is practice. One of the things, though, that I do struggle with is video, is live social media. So what I've done with this podcast is to take it from just being a podcast that I can do with myself, do in the room, have the ability to edit, all of that kind of stuff. And I've gone and dropped it live on Facebook. And you know what? The first time it didn't work, it failed. And that was, look, my biggest fear was that I look like an idiot in front of people that are watching it. I'm working with a community. I build a community. I want to seem like I'm professional. I want to seem like at least I know what I'm doing. And hey, the audio didn't work. These things happen, but you've got to put yourself out there. What I've done, though, is I've taken something that I'm very comfortable with doing, and then I've added something that starts to touch on that nerve that engages my fear. And when I start, I'm then going to spend some time, obviously now I'm talking to you online, if you're listening, if you're still here, but I'm I'm then going to release this as a podcast. So I've tied something that I'm very comfortable doing and added that layer of fear into it. And by spending time there, what I do is I basically sort of take the first layer off that fear. I start to become more comfortable with it. And then I can celebrate the fact that I've done it. That this, hey, this worked. What's actually happened is I've now spent nearly an hour and a quarter on Facebook Live because I did one live with no audio and one live with audio. But, you know, that's just the way it went. So what are your fears that, and how can you break them down? And how can you then figure out how to spend some time in that space? Because when you do that, you can then celebrate overcoming those chunks. So if we go back to our example about standing on the edge of the Grand Canyon, the first time you visit, don't even think about going all the way to the edge. Instead, think about getting out your car, getting to that point where you can see the edge, because that's normally where the fear kicks in for you, and then say, right, I'm going to take four paces. And when I take four paces, I'm going to stand there for 2 minutes, and I'm going to calm my breathing down, and I'm just going to get comfortable with being there. And if I feel like it, I'll take another two paces. If I don't feel like it, that's absolutely fine. I'll go back to the car and I'll give myself 5 minutes. And if I can try again, I'll try again. If I have to go home, I'll come back next week and I'll try it next week. But you know what? I've been four paces closer to the edge than I've ever done before. And I can celebrate that. And then next week comes and you get to that point where you were previously and you can think, right, I'm comfortable here. I've been here before. I'm now going to take another four paces, and you can just repeat and repeat and repeat that process until ultimately the destination will come. You will be stood on the edge of the Grand Canyon, and you know what? Once you've done that two or three times, you'll simply walk, you'll pull up in the parking lot and you'll walk straight to the edge. Gary Vee, whether you love him or hate him, did say that entrepreneurs too often get hooked on the destination. They get hooked on the idea of, I want to be a millionaire, or I want to have offices in every state, or I want to have offices in every continent, or I want to earn this amount of money. They get hooked on a destination that they forget to enjoy the journey. And actually, as I say, whether you agree or disagree with Gary Vee and some of the stuff he says is kind of irrelevant. When you engage with the journey of being an entrepreneur, when you engage in the journey of running your own business and developing new streams of income and creating new products and services, then you're in a far better place. You're in a far you're in a place that causes less stress, less tension. You know what? The reality is, if you trust the process, if you find the right niche, if you have the right product, the right service, if you're willing to go an inch wide and a mile deep, all of those cliches, then over time, the money is going to come. You will be successful. So rather than wishing your life away and getting there too quickly, enjoy the process. What else can you learn through going through this process? Because if you learn from this, it also gives you the ability to have something that's bigger than money out the other end. It gives you the ability to coach people, to find young talent and encourage them to grow. So you're not just becoming an entrepreneur for yourself, but you're actually contributing to the global ecosystem as a whole. It connects you into a far bigger stage. So we've spoken about failure, we've spoken about fear. We're all there so far. The one thing, though, that ties these two things together and that really helps you start to use fear and failure to develop yourself, starts to use it as a force for good in your business, is to understand two things about yourself. And this is where life becomes really quite difficult. This discussion becomes really quite awkward. Because having to look at anything internally, you got to be brave. This is actually where courage comes in. It's not all of this outward facing stuff. It's when you then turn around and look at it internally to yourself. And the two things you need to understand are how your emotions work and where your shortcomings are. See, the thing with emotion is great. We all need to be passionate. We all need to be, we need to have the things that we can get our teeth into that that help us define who we are. But if those emotions are placed in the, I'm not going to say in the wrong place. If you start to become over emotional in certain places, particularly where decisions need to be made, then actually you really need to recognize that in yourself, because being overly emotional in points of decision making, that's when your heart starts to overtake your head, and that can lead you into trouble. Just because something feels right doesn't necessarily mean that it is right. And in order to make decisions, particularly in business, we need to be looking at data, we need to be looking at numbers, we need to be looking at trends, we need to understand what it is that we're trying to achieve and make the decisions that are best for that. We need to make decisions that are good for our customers, for our audience. So having emotion in there can often confuse things. So you need to understand if your emotions are going to overrule you in particular places, what those places are, so that you can be aware of that. And at those moments, you're able to stand back and say, okay, that's it. I'm just going to take five. I need to cool down. I need to take my emotion out of this. We need to look at this objectively. That's number one, emotion. Number two is your shortcomings. Now, the reality is we all have them. It doesn't matter who you are online, what somebody's YouTube video looks like or YouTube channel looks like, how many social media followers they've got, how many people they send their email out to. We all have shortcomings. And it's about identifying them so we know where we need extra support. If you don't identify with them, and I used to be like this, I used to want to do everything on my own. And ultimately, my freelance business failed for two reasons. One was because I didn't value myself enough. And the second was because I wasn't prepared or didn't want to let other people help me. And I tried to do everything on my own. And because of that, I struggled. You see, the thing is, if you've got something that you're not particularly good at, you will know that you're not particularly good at it. You don't need to broadcast this stuff. You will just know that you're not good at it. If you then try and spend time, you force yourself to do those things, it means that firstly, you're going to take longer to do it because you don't really want to do it. And you'll probably push it off for a while so that people, you know, so that you'll put it further down your to-do list. And you won't start it quickly, so it won't finish quickly at all. Secondly, you won't be engaged with it, so the quality of that work won't be particularly good. So if you understand that this is something I'm not particularly good at, you can always go and find somebody where that is their area of expertise. Now, it might cost you a bit of money, but what you get back in return is you get the job done to a far better standard than you were ever going to do it. And you get all the time back so that you can then go and do something that you love doing instead. So, you know, I hate bookkeeping. I absolutely hate it with a passion. And because of that, I'm not very good at it. But, you know, somebody wants to come in and do my books, I'll happily give them money. You know, they can just have it and just have the money, all of it. Go. There you go. Because I know that I'm going to get a better job back and it's something I don't have to worry about. And I can then go and do X, Y, and Z, which is what I love doing. So in constructing your business, understanding where your emotions are and where your shortcomings are helps you both work objectively and then fill the gaps so that you're providing not just a better service for your clients, but a better business for yourself. And we all went into business to have a better life. We didn't do this to make hard work for ourselves. We understand there's a bit of risk and there's certain things that need to happen, but we ultimately did it so we could have a better quality of life. So look, that's where these strands kind of tie together. So what I'd like you to do is, between now and next week, between now and next Monday's podcast, I want you to go and put a 15-minute slot in your diary. You can put longer if you want, but a 15-minute slot in your diary. Go and find yourself 15 minutes. And start to think about what your fears are. Start to think about what are the things that you're worried you will fail at and what coping mechanisms you can put in place for both of those. So with fears, what are the smaller chunks that you can look at? With failures, things that you're worried about failing? What are the fail safes that you can put in? What's that process you can put in place to try and protect yourself from it a little bit, but also to take the positive away from it? With your emotions, I want you to identify the places where you are overly emotional. That can be a business thing. Doesn't have to be, but understanding it in yourself makes you a more rounded person, regardless of where it is. And then finally, think about your shortcomings and where are the areas that you can go and find extra support. Now, I'm not going to ask you to publish those anywhere or do anything, you know, don't make them public. This is a reflection of you. But instead, just identify them, because from there, you can then start to make a plan as to how you address them. If you want to reach out to anybody, you know, you, by all means, you can post in the marketing development group. You're more than happy to do so. I've told you that it is a safe space that you can have these conversations. But if you don't want to do that, and personally, I wouldn't do that. So feel free, if you want to, if you've got nobody to talk to, drop me a message. Send me a messenger message. I may not be able to come back to you straight away, but I will come back to you and we can have a conversation about it if that is something that's going to help you. There's also other places you can go online. If you're working in the WordPress space, go and check out WP and Up. They work a lot around mental health in our line of business. So, you know, there may be things, particularly if issues start cropping up, go and find yourself some support. But ultimately, if you can grasp hold of these four things and start to put strategies and acceptance in place, then these are the things that are going to make your business go beyond places that you can ever, ever imagine. So look, I hope you found that useful. Show notes are going to be at peteverett.com/068. I'll have a link in there to Ant Middleton and his book and all that kind of stuff. But the place that started me off on this journey where I've been now rambling for half an hour. But that's... they'll all be in the show notes, but make sure that you go and put a 15-minute appointment in your diary and go and address those four things. And I'll see you next week.